This morning's scripture reading is going to be in Jonah chapter 4. As I start reading Jonah chapter 4, one of the first things you're going to encounter is how Jonah is upset that God indeed is going to show mercy on the Ninevites since they repented and turned from their wickedness. And God's going to not only address Ninevites, but he's also going to be addressing Jonah's heart as well right here. Jonah chapter 4. Please follow along with me as I read. But it greatly displeased Jonah, and he became angry. He prayed to the Lord and said, "Please, Lord, was not this what I said while I was still in my own country? Therefore, in order to forestall this, I fled to Tarshish, for I knew that you are a gracious and compassionate God, slow to anger and abundant in loving kindness, and one who relents concerning calamity. Therefore now, O Lord, please take my life from me, for death is better to me than life." The Lord said, "Do you have good reason to be angry?" Then Jonah went out from the city and sat east of it. There he made a shelter for himself and sat under it in the shade until he could see what would happen in the city. So the Lord God appointed a plant, and it grew up over Jonah to be a shade over him, over his head, to deliver him from his discomfort. And Jonah was extremely happy about the plant. But God appointed a worm when dawn came the next day, and it attacked the plant, and it withered. And it came about when the sun came up that God appointed a scorching east wind, and the sun beat down on Jonah's head, so that he became faint and begged with all his soul to die, saying, "Death is better to me than life." Then God said to Jonah, "Do you have good reason to be angry about the plant?" And he said, "I have good reason to be angry, even to death." Then the Lord said, "You had compassion on the plant for which you did not work and which you did not cause to grow, which came up overnight and perished overnight. Should I not have compassion on Nineveh, the great city, in which there are more than 120,000 persons who do not know the difference between their right and their left hands, as well as many animals?"
For the past 3 weeks, we've been making our way through this little book, and today is our final message on this little book. And as we've gone, we've seen that Jonah has been on quite a journey. And I'm not just talking about his ride on the ship during that terrible storm, or those moments that he was in the water on the verge of drowning, or even the 3 days and three nights he spent in the belly of the fish. Jonah has been on quite a spiritual journey as he's growing in his understanding and comprehension of who God is. Before the word of the Lord came to Jonah in chapter 1, I'm guessing that Jonah thought that he had a pretty good grasp of who God is and how God is working in this world. I mean, he was a prophet after all. He was a spokesman for God himself. But we discovered that Jonah had some very wrong views and very wrong understandings about God. You see, Jonah thought that God was just like him, that God thought in a similar way, that God had similar desires and goals. But when the word of the Lord came to Jonah, Jonah quickly discovered that his thoughts and God's thoughts were not matching up in some very important areas. And thus began the spiritual journey that God took Jonah on, all for the purpose of helping Jonah discover and understand more of who God is. And in chapter 1, we saw that Jonah understood that God's will is clear and should never be resisted. In chapter 2, Jonah discovered that God provides a person hope even in the midst of tragedy. In the beginning of chapter 3, Jonah discovered that God is perfect in his timing and how he directs. He learned that God has a perfect plan and longs to show mercy and compassion to those who trust him and obey. But those aren't the only lessons that God wanted to teach Jonah. He still had more lessons. That's what we're going to see as we look at Jonah chapter 4. Jonah needed to understand just how great God's compassion is. You see, Jonah thought that God had too much compassion. That's what Jonah thought. When in reality, God's mercy, as we're going to see in the text, is incredible. His compassion is incredible. Jonah chapter 4 provides convicting evidence of just how great God's mercy and compassion really is. And we're able to see that as God's grand mercy is contrasted with the small and almost insignificant at times compassion that men demonstrate. So as we look at the text, it's my prayer that each one of us will be overwhelmed and amazed again at God's incredible compassion and mercy. As we join Jonah on the journey, starting in verse 1, we must first understand that God's mercy is exasperating to sinful men. You see, because of our sinful nature, there's part of us that is annoyed and sometimes even irritated at the fact that God has mercy on some people, people whom we think do not deserve God's mercy. Notice the text begins in verse 1 with the word, but. That's in contrast to the previous verse, chapter 3 and verse 10, where we see that God is relenting. God is withholding the judgment and punishment that deserve to fall on the Ninevites because of their sin. God is being merciful, which is an incredible reality that should cause anyone to stand up and rejoice, but it greatly displeased Jonah. Jonah was not at all happy with God's magnificent display of mercy. In fact, the text says that he became angry. He was irritated. He was annoyed at God's mercy. He was exasperated. He was enraged. He was furious. Instead of rejoicing at God's magnificent display of mercy, Jonah was resentful. Instead of celebrating God's mercy, Jonah was outraged. Talk about a contrast. Now, we don't have to wonder or speculate why Jonah was so angry. The text tells us in verse 2. But before we look at that, notice in verse 2 that Jonah is praying. And that's a good thing to do. To talk about God, to talk to God about the things that we are thinking. That's exactly what Jonah is doing here. That's a good thing. But what's not good in verse 2 is that Jonah is misunderstanding it and misapplying grand truths about God. Jonah was convinced that he was correct in his thinking. But the reality is, just because we think, just because we feel, just because we experience something does not mean that it is right or true. But Jonah is so convinced about his errant beliefs that he is becoming angry. Children can do this, right? You teach a child a new game, and as they're learning this new game, things aren't going well, they're not winning. And so they are convinced that something's wrong with the game, or someone is cheating, right? And so they become angry based on their wrong beliefs. Or, if a child is walking with his father through a busy parking lot, the father has a child by the hand, the child wants to walk alone to the car himself. He is convinced that he can make it there safely, and so he's pulling hard on his father's hand. Of course, the father's not going to let go because he knows there's a good chance that the child walks alone, he's going to get hit by a vehicle. But the child is convinced, so convinced that he's becoming angry. But we as adults can do the same thing as well. Now, there are times when we are convinced that we can arrange things much better than God. And when things don't go our way, because we think the way we think they should, we can become angry. But notice why Jonah's angry here in verse number 2. Look at his prayer. He says, "Please, Lord, was not this what I said while I was still in my own country? Therefore, in order to forestall this, I fled to Tarshish. For I knew that you are a gracious and compassionate God, slow to anger and abundant in loving kindness, and one who relents concerning calamity." Jonah was angry at God's mercy. Jonah was convinced that God was being too compassionate. And as a result, he was exasperated. He was angry. In fact, he is so angry that he wants to die. Do you see that there in verse 3? Therefore now, O Lord, please take my life from me, for death is better to me than life. That is serious anger. Jonah is convinced that it is better to die than to live. So the question is, how did Jonah get to this point? How does one become angry at God's magnificent display of mercy? How does that happen? Well, in order to answer that question, we need to understand a little bit more where Jonah was coming from. You see, in Jonah's way of thinking, there were some people who deserved God's mercy, but there were other people who did not deserve God's mercy. In Jonah's mind, he personally deserved God's mercy. God's covenant people, the nation of Israel, they deserved God's mercy. But the Ninevites, they didn't deserve God's mercy. You see, those Ninevites were terrible, wicked, violent, cruel sinners who deserved God's wrath and judgment. And so when those Ninevites receive God's mercy, Jonah's becoming angry. He's becoming angry because in his mind, God is not being fair. God was not doing what he was supposed to be doing by judging these Ninevites. Everything was all wrong. In our sinful way of thinking, we too can sometimes think that God's mercy must be fair. Which translated means that everyone who is worse than we are should never receive God's mercy. Especially those who are really bad. Those really bad people deserve God's judgment and wrath. And they're going to get it. While we ourselves, because we really aren't that bad, we can fairly receive God's mercy. But that is wrong and even sinful thinking. You see, the reality is, if fairness were the standard, no one would receive God's mercy. I wouldn't. You wouldn't. Not a single person on this entire planet would receive God's mercy. If it was fair, each one of us would suffer for eternity because of our sins. That would be fair. But yet, just like Jonah, we can slip into this thinking that it's not fair if God displays mercy to terrible, wicked people. Jesus tells a parable in Matthew chapter 20 that I think helps illustrate this well. There in Matthew chapter 20, Jesus explains that the kingdom of heaven is like a landowner who has a vineyard. And one day, he hired workers to work in his vineyard. He went out at 6 a.m. and hired a group of workers. He then went out at 9 a.m. and hired a few more. And then at noon, he hired another group. And as he hired each one of these group, he promised them that he would pay them, at the end of the day, he would pay them a denarius, which was a single day's wages. So for today, let's just say it was $150. So he hired some at 6, some at 9, some at noon. He then even went and hired some more at 3, and then at 5 p.m., he hired even more. Well, at the end of the day, the workers come in from the field, and the landowner is going to hand out their wages. And so he begins by handing the group who were hired at 5 p.m., he hands them a denarius, $150. And immediately, those who were hired at 6 a.m. begin to have dollar signs dancing through their heads. Because they're thinking, if the people that started at 5 p.m. are getting $150, how much more money are we going to get? But when the landowner gets to those people who started at 6 a.m., what does he do? He hands them a denarius. He just hands them $150. And what do they say? Well, Jesus tells us in verse 13, he says, when they received it, they grumbled at the landowner. You see, this wasn't fair. They had begun working at 6 a.m. They had worked 11 more hours than those other people who also got $150. They had endured the scorching heat of the day. This was not fair. They are grumbling. They are becoming angry. And I'm guessing if I was there, I too would have struggled with that as well. But notice how the landowner responds to them. We read in Matthew chapter 20, starting in verse 13, but he answered and said to them, one of them, friend, I am doing you no wrong. Did you not agree with me for a denarius? Take what is yours and go. But I wish to give to this last man the same as to you. Is it not lawful for me to do what I wish with what is my own? Or is your eye envious because I am generous? You see, at the beginning of the day, those who were hired at 6 a.m. were excited about the prospect of making $150. And they received $150 just like they were promised. But now, as Jesus says, they are envious. They're envious of those other people who received the same amount, who didn't work nearly as long. And that envy can lead to anger. And that's very similar to what Jonah is experiencing here. He is envious, leading to anger of the fact that the Ninevites are receiving God's mercy. One of the reasons that God's mercy can be exasperating at times to sinful men is because we do not have a proper understanding of the truths about God. Notice in verse 2, Jonah's theology is pretty good. It's very good, right? As he says that God is gracious and compassionate, slow to anger, abundant in loving kindness, and one who relents concerning calamity. Those are grand truths. However, Jonah mistakenly thought that those grand truths only applied to the children of Israel. People who, in his mind, deserved God's mercy. But as we already mentioned, no one deserves God's mercy. Everyone deserves God's wrath. But the reality is, God is consistent with all people everywhere, just like the landowner in Jesus' parable. Everyone has the opportunity to turn to God in faith and repentance and experience His mercy. But in Jonah's mind, there were certain people in the world who didn't deserve God's mercy. And thus, when they received it, he was exasperated. He was angry to the point of wanting to die. Can you relate to Jonah? I'm guessing you haven't wanted to die because God has been merciful to someone who in your mind didn't deserve it. But I'm guessing you've been angry or frustrated before. I know I have. When God saves a murderer, when God saves a person who has raped or abused children, there's a part of us that can become irritated at that. In a similar way, when you and I are sinned against, we suffer because of that sin. That person who sinned against us is confronted. They repent. And then they come to us and ask us to forgive them. And there's a part of us that doesn't want to forgive them, because we want them to suffer just like we suffered. We don't want them to receive mercy. You see, in some ways, we're not that much different from Jonah. Many times, these wrong thoughts come from a misunderstanding of our own sin. We forget that we don't deserve God's mercy any more than the next sinner. But yet God has lavished His mercy on us. And so if God has given us mercy, why should not God give mercy to another sinner who needs it just as much? As we observe God's response to Jonah's confused thinking there in verse 4, we see a second truth about God's mercy, namely, that it is enduring towards saints. Aren't you thankful that you and I are not God? I think if most of us were God and we were dealing with Jonah, and this is what Jonah is doing, we'd have said, all right, if you're going to act that way after all I've done for you, you are done. Zap. Gone. Because remember, just weeks before, God had spared Jonah's life. After which Jonah had promised to serve him at the end of chapter 2. But now, it's like Jonah has gone right back to where he was in chapter 1. But yet, God is not like us. God is merciful to Jonah. He is enduring. And notice in chapter 4, I find it fascinating that God doesn't address Jonah's desire to die. Did you catch that? Instead, God gets to the root of the problem by addressing Jonah's anger. And notice also that God doesn't simply tell Jonah, stop being angry. You're acting like a little child, which was kind of true. But that's not how God responds. God is merciful. He is enduring in his mercy towards Jonah. And so he simply asks him the question there in verse 4. Do you have good reason to be angry? Jonah didn't want to answer the question. And so he wants to pout, if I could put it that way. And so that's exactly what he does in verse 5 as he goes out of the city and sits on the east side. He constructs a makeshift shelter so he can sit there and observe as he waits for God to judge the city of Nineveh like he thinks he should. And again, God is merciful to Jonah. What does he do there in verse 6? He doesn't strike him down at that point. Instead, God provides a plant. And that plant provides Jonah comfort. Isn't our God amazing? When we deserve to be disciplined or corrected, which is basically all the time, God provides us mercy. He gives us gifts that we don't deserve. His mercy is enduring. Now, of course, God is going to use that plant to teach Jonah an important lesson. But in the midst of this, God is demonstrating his mercy and compassion. And notice Jonah's response. You see that there at the end of verse 6? The text says, and Jonah was extremely happy about the plant. Each and every day, you and I are recipients of God's mercy and compassion, even beyond the incredible gift of salvation that we have received. The fact that you can breathe, the fact that you can see, hear, walk, and move about, the fact that you have family and friends around you are all demonstrations of God's mercy. The fact that God continues to forgive us when we sin against him for the second, third, and 2,967th time is a demonstration of his magnificent mercy. As we read in Lamentations chapter 3, God's mercy is new every morning. We must not take his incredible mercy for granted. God's mercy is enduring towards saints. But notice, as we come to verse 7, that it is also educational in struggles. Educational. Jonah enjoyed that plant for one day. It delivered him from his discomfort, and Jonah was happy about the plant. But then, as we come to verse 7, the next day, as you see, God sent a worm to kill that plant. And on top of that, as you see in verse 8, when the sun came up, God sent a scorching east wind, and he directed that sun to beat down on Jonah's head so that Jonah was miserable. As the text says at the end of verse 8, so that he became faint and begged with all his soul to die, saying, death is better to me than life. Jonah's on quite a journey, right? In verses 2 and 3, he is angry. In verse 6, he is extremely happy. And now in verse 8, he is angry again. If bipolar was a medical reality, Jonah would be diagnosed. But the reality is, Jonah is human. He is just like you and me. As humans, we have emotions and thoughts. Our emotions and thoughts at times are so often connected to what we are experiencing in the physical realm. Because notice, it's possible that Jonah was suffering from heat stroke. As the sun is beating down on his head, the text says he's becoming faint. Jonah is not doing well physically. But even more importantly, Jonah is not doing well spiritually. Jonah is confused. Jonah misunderstands God's mercy. Jonah is struggling mightily with anger, and this time it's over a plant. As you see in the text, he is begging with all his soul to die. Jonah was done. He was ready to throw in the towel. For him, life was a big joke. He was finished. But it was in that moment that God asked Jonah a second question. Look at verse 9. Do you have good reason to be angry about the plant? Again, did you notice? God doesn't address Jonah's desire to die. Instead, he talks to Jonah about the fruit of what's going on. Excuse me, the root of what's going on, which is his anger. That's the root of the problem. With God's question here and the further explanation that God is going to give to Jonah, God was opening Jonah's eyes, helping him to see the sinfulness of his thinking. God's mercy was educational for Jonah as he used this illustration of this plant to teach Jonah important lessons in the midst of his struggles. Because remember, God is the one who caused this plant to grow up overnight. God is the one who sent the worm to kill the plant. God is the one who appointed the scorching east wind. God was the one who made sure there was no clouds in the sky that morning so the sun could beat down on Jonah's head. God was in control of all of this, and he was using it to educate Jonah. God was using this object lesson to help Jonah understand just how extremely selfish he was being. Jonah was only thinking about himself. Jonah was much more concerned about his physical comforts than he was about the spiritual destiny of the people that he had just finished preaching to in Nineveh. And that's convicting. How much more are you and I concerned and focused on our physical comforts than we are concerned and focused on the spiritual destiny of our neighbors, our friends, and our family members? We can become frustrated and even angry when the air conditioner stops working in our car on a hot summer day. But we never give a second thought at times to the extreme heat that our unbelieving friend will experience for all of eternity if they refuse to turn to Christ. We can get all bent out of shape about the rising inflation and about how our government seems to be destroying this country, even the economy. But yet, we fail to see and sometimes even ignore the greater spiritual needs that are all around us. We don't want to give our neighbor a track because they might get mad at us. They might make us uncomfortable. Even though the truth in that little book has the opportunity to transform their life now and for all of eternity. You see, we so easily focus on ourselves and our desire for comfort and ease and completely ignore the much greater spiritual need that exists all around us. I know I can be extremely selfish, extremely focused on my personal comfort. So we need to pray and ask the Lord to change our hearts. Through the illustration of this plant, God was educating Jonah on the reality of God's incredible and magnificent compassion. Jonah had compassion on a soulless plant that he had no control over. If anyone should have had compassion on that plant, it should have been God, right? God was the one who created it. God was the one who caused it to grow. But how much more compassion should God have on people, on men and women whom he has created in his image? God's compassion was flowing from his heart, flowing from who he is. And Jonah needed an education on God's heart, on the beauty of God's compassion and mercy. This is what God was doing. Our God is so incredible how he's able to take anything in every situation and teach us, educate us about who he is as he conforms us into the image of his son. So let's be good students. Let's learn all that God has to teach us as he takes us through the successes and the struggles of life. The final truth that we see in verses 10 through 11 is that God's mercy is extraordinary toward sinners. In other words, God's mercy and compassion is remarkable. It far exceeds any mercy and compassion that you and I can muster in our own strength. Even as believers, even as we're walking by the Spirit, living by His power and control, the mercy and compassion that you and I are able to demonstrate is so small compared to how great God's mercy and compassion is. God's mercy and compassion is exponentially greater than ours. It is extraordinary. It is extraordinary. Listen again to what God says here in verse 10. As he talks to Jonah, he says, "You had compassion on the plant for which you did not work and which you did not cause to grow, which came up overnight and perished overnight. Should I not have compassion on Nineveh, the great city in which there are more than 120,000 persons who do not know the difference between their right and left hand, as well as many animals?" With these words, God is pointing out the inconsistencies of Jonah's compassion. Jonah had great compassion over a plant. But on the other hand, Jonah had zero compassion over human souls who are going to spend eternity somewhere forever. Do you see the inconsistencies? Human souls are so much more valuable than plants. God is the one who has created every person in this entire world. And as the creator, he's naturally going to have compassion on his creation, especially those who are ignorant of the realities of life and sin. That reference to 120,000 persons who don't know the difference between their right and left hand is a reference to children. You see, if Jonah would have had his way, all of those children would have been destroyed when Nineveh is overthrown. But our God is compassionate. He is merciful towards sinners. His mercy is extraordinary towards sinners. He will show mercy to those who turn to Him in faith and repentance. But notice also, God's compassion also extends to the animals. Did you see that there in verse 11? That's interesting. These animals also would have perished if Nineveh would have been overthrown like Jonah wanted. But God is having compassion on the animals. Jesus tells us, right, that God is the one who feeds the birds of the air. God, Jesus says in Matthew chapter 10, is concerned. He is aware, is in control of each sparrow so that not one of them will fall to the ground apart from your Father. Our God's compassion and mercy even extends to animals. And if you want to read more about that, check Psalm 104 out. It's a great psalm that helps us to see God's compassion and mercy towards His entire creation. God's compassion and mercy is extraordinary. Jonah understood that God was compassionate, but Jonah had a narrow view of God's compassion. Jonah didn't fully understand or apply the incredible reality of God's compassion and mercy. And the same thing can happen to you and to I. I would guess that most of us would agree with the theology in verse 2. We understand that God is gracious and compassionate, slow to anger and abundant in loving kindness, one who relents concerning calamity. We know those truths. But the question is, do those truths excite us? Do those truths drive us to tell those around us about our great and a marvelous God? Or, like Jonah, are we more excited about our plants in our garden? Our sports team, our job, or our hobby? Do we have more compassion over our car, our cell phone, our computer, or our house than we do over people? You and I, and I'm speaking personally, can become angry, can become frustrated when one of those objects is harmed or destroyed. But yet, we barely blink an eye when our unsaved neighbor dies in his sleep. We have no compassion for our unbelieving coworkers who are heading to hell. See, God's compassion is not too great. The problem is our compassion is way too small. We so easily get distracted by our personal desires and completely overlook the spiritual needs that are all around us. I know I have some major growing to do in my compassion and mercy. I can come up with all kinds of excuses why I should not share the gospel or talk about God with an unbeliever that I'm interacting with. But those are just excuses. They're skins of a reason stuffed with a lie, as one preacher likes to say. Let's allow God's Spirit to work in our hearts and our life. Let's allow God to take the truths from Jonah 4 and apply them to our life. Let's learn from Jonah's example. Like Jonah, we need to learn that God does not have too much compassion. Instead, we need to grow in our understanding and comprehension of just how compassionate our God truly is towards sinners. And as we're growing in our understanding of God's incredible compassion, our personal compassion will also increase. As believers, our goal must be to see people as God sees them. How does God see them? Join me in Matthew chapter 9. Matthew chapter 9. This passage gives us a hint, gives us a picture, if you will, about how God sees people, specifically how Jesus saw the people that he was interacting with. Matthew chapter 9, we're just going to start reading in verse number 35. The text says, Jesus was going through all the cities and villages, teaching in their synagogues and proclaiming the gospel of the kingdom and healing every kind of disease and every kind of sickness. Verse 36, seeing the people, he felt compassion for them because they were distressed and dispirited like sheep without a shepherd. Then he said to his disciples, the harvest is plentiful, but the workers are few. Therefore, beseech the Lord of the harvest to send out workers into his harvest. As you interact with the people around you, do you feel compassion for them like Jesus did for those around him? Do we truly understand the great need that they have for the gospel? Do we understand that the harvest truly is plentiful? There are so many people around us who are in desperate need to hear the truth of the gospel. And so the question is, will you go? And that question is not just for missionaries or pastors. That question is for all believers. In one sense, as believers, all of us are missionaries. All of us are sent by God to share the grand truths about who God is with all those around us. But yet, many times we act just like Jonah. We think that someone else should share the gospel with them. Or maybe sometimes we even think it shouldn't be done. But the reality is we need to grow in our compassion. And the more we grow in our understanding of and comprehension of God's incredible compassion, the more our compassion for those around us will increase. So as God's Spirit works in your heart, growing your compassion for the lost people around you, I'd like to give you a specific challenge. Last fall, we started distributing those Jesus DVDs and those packets that contained the tracts. And we made some good progress, but we still have some more work to do. So I'd like to challenge each one of you to take some of those packets that are on the table back there. There's some loose ones. You can just grab one or two. Take them home with you today and make it your goal to give them to your neighbors. Some of you have already done that, which is good, but some of you have not. And so if you have not, can I be so bold to say, don't be like Jonah? Don't run in the opposite direction. Ask the Lord to fill you with his compassion and be willing to take a couple of minutes to talk with your neighbor this week. If I could give you another challenge and then I will be done. I'd like to challenge you to write on your outline the name of one person who you will talk about God with, who you will share the gospel with this week. Maybe for some of you, it's going to be that neighbor that you're going to give the Jesus DVD to. Maybe others of you, you're going to write down your coworker's name or a family member. It's possible that as you're sitting there, not a person's name is not coming to mind. You've shared the gospel with everyone around you, in which case I would encourage you to pray and ask God to give you an opportunity this week to share the gospel with one person. I'm pretty sure God will answer that prayer. Brothers and sisters, let's not be like Jonah. Let's not construct our little shelter around ourselves while we wait for God to overthrow the unbelievers all around us. Instead, let's share the glorious truth that our God is gracious and compassionate, slow to anger, and abounding in loving kindness, one who relents concerning calamity.